Thank you, Brother Ted. Well, we're happy to have our dear brother Harry Wildblood with us once again. And he's worked on a subject with a handout and a video, or a DVD or computer, laptop, whatever way you recognize it. And if you haven't got a handout, please raise your hand and the brethren will get one to you. If you have, fine. Brother Harry selected for his subject Earth's Great Jubilee. Earth's Great Jubilee. Looking forward to the Lord's blessing through your ministry, Brother Harry.
Thank you. Good afternoon, brother. I know you're expecting a lesson on Hebrews. But Hebrews, I think, is one of my, it's hard to pick a favorite, but Hebrews is the Rosetta Stone of the New Testament. It really, you know, puts together the New Testament and Old Testament. But what's it really about? It's about the Lord's return. It's about the times of restitution. It's really about the after that was talked about when we find about what is that after going to have in mind. Really, the Great Jubilee and the Grand Jubilee, which we'll talk about a little bit later. I know we just had lunch. You may be feeling a little. So we want to be a little animated and talk about something that should be thrilling to all of us. Now, later next month, I'm going to be giving an eulogy and a word of hope from the Scriptures in a Presbyterian church for my mother. So we're going to have a chance to say some hopefully thrilling things to folks who've never heard them before. Hopefully we're going to be saying some thrilling things to folks who have heard them again and again and want to keep hearing them again and again and again. So if you don't have a handout, that's okay. You read the second volume in the Jubilee chapter and you're going to have it. We're going to throw in a few extra tidbits here and there. Great Jubilee. Why would we study this? Well, this is one of the types of law. This is in Leviticus, the types of the law. Types, very, very strong, powerful lessons that God wants us to get. Not just a picture, but a type, something which is going to be fulfilled, a type which is going to have an antitype. We, as the church, want to know what these are because these types, they're really not given for the world. The world doesn't have a clue. They were given for us. So we want to look through there. If we're truly sons of God and we are led by the Spirit of God, we want to know everything our Father has put in His Scriptures as a love letter to us, to build us up, so we can imbibe that Spirit. That's how we'll make our calling election sure. We want to understand as many things about God's plan, and we're going to see that with the Jubilees, we're going to be looking at the times of restitution and the Lord's return. And we want to see how those are inextricably linked together. And we should already realize that, but we want to see through this by the end of this. You should see the Lord's return and the times of restitution are linked together. And that's how one indicates the other. Now, in order to understand the big picture of this, we're going to have to start back at the beginning. And there are a lot of facts and figures and numbers and et cetera. But, you know, when we take a look at our chart, by the way, in order to understand this chart, you have to understand the Jubilees. Otherwise, this chart is sort of floating. You don't know where to put it in time. But when we have the chronology in the Jubilees, we actually know when these things are. Now we can fix it. We can drive a stake, and that will not move. So this is absolutely crucial. But notice what it says. Write down the vision and make it really complicated and hard to understand. Make it plain. And you'll find to understand the Jubilees and go through this, you'll need a paper and pencil and arithmetic. If you've got, third grade, fourth grade arithmetic, if you can handle that, no problem. You should be able to, multiplication, addition, you've got it. So, I'm hoping I can handle the arithmetic too. And now, I teach at a university. One thing I've found in the courses that I've taken and is that there is no such thing as a difficult concept. There are simply bad explanations. Okay? So hopefully with the Lord's help, starting with Brother Russell, so you can't do better than the seventh messenger. We're going to start with that, embellish it, emphasize a few things. But hopefully the Lord will put together a good explanation, and this will be plain. Okay. So we want to start at the beginning. We have to start at back with Adam. I think Brother Jim Martin realizes we always have to start with Adam. Begin with Adam. Okay. Adam was created. One thing we want to realize about God's work is all of his work is perfect. So even though Adam was printed, it was said it was very good. Very good to God means it's perfect. If it's not perfect, it's not good at all, as far as God is concerned. So in Genesis 2:7, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. This is important, the breath of life. And man became a living soul. So he was given life, a perfect character. In fact, some of the things were discussed this morning. Notice he didn't need a priesthood because he was perfect. He had a relationship with God that was already established. Really, what you need a priest for is in case you're out of harmony with God. The priest is in harmony, and the priest can help establish that relationship. Adam didn't need that. He was perfect. Didn't need a priest. Was perfect. He had dominion. We're going to talk more about dominion because restitution and dominion are very closely linked. We'll see that a little later. And he had communion with God. Now, we don't understand exactly how this took place. Was it something he heard in his mind or with his ears? We don't know. It seems to be more profound than what we have through prayer. Now, the lessons that our Father teaches us are certainly much deeper than what Adam got, but that communication, that was very profound. But then what happens is Adam sinned, he fell, and we know that cursed is the ground for thy sake. Now, Adam was going to be tilling the ground. Cursing, when you curse the ground, you're essentially saying, in the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat thy bread all the days of thy life, and unto dust shalt thou return, and dying thou shalt die. He had dominion. Well, when these things are taking place, he certainly doesn't have dominion anymore. I mean, if you take a look at the way life was centuries and centuries ago, mankind did have to work 12 hours a day just to have food on the table and clothes on their back and a roof over their head. And that's hard work all day long. All day long. So he certainly lost life. Now, he would have had the opportunity for everlasting life if the sin had not taken place. He lost that, lost his perfect character, lost the dominion, and has lost his communion with God. And I'm sure that some of his experiences were extremely hard to take. For instance, when Cain becomes jealous of Abel, and Cain, two of his sons, one rises up and kills the other. Now, there's a family problem you're never going to get rid of. I don't know if they had family reunions back then, but this was not going to be a pleasant event. And I'm sure when Adam found out what had been done, he said, oh my word, what have I done? I had no idea. I opened this Pandora's box of sin and death for everyone. Well, was there a future hope? Well, there were many, many blessings promised. The first one, very difficult to understand. The seed of the woman shall bruise the serpent's head, and it shall bruise his heel. In fact, that is so difficult to understand. I'd mentioned that to folks who really studied the Bible out in the churches, and they had no idea. What are you talking about? It meant nothing to them. I mean, here was this faint glimpse of hope, and then about 2,000 years go by. 2,000 years. I mean, that's something. I can't comprehend that length of time. I just can't. We have in Genesis 22:18, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, all the families of the earth. This was a tremendous promise, because after all, this is a prison planet. Everybody condemned to death, justly condemned to death. Dying thou shalt die. And then here's this promise which God gives Abraham to bless all the families of the earth. So that must imply the removal of this death sentence in some way. You know, if you think of, suppose you went to, because all this is a prison planet, they're all on death row. Now, if you were to go to a prison today and go down to death row and say, hey, we got good news for everybody. And they'd say, oh, we're off of death row? And they say, well, you say, well, that's not it. And they say, then get out of here. Because when you're on death row, there's no good news other than you're no longer on death row. They don't want to hear anything else. because all they can think of is that death sentence over their head, and that's all mankind is. So this is a tremendous promise. Somehow God is going to remove that death sentence and still satisfies his own justice. So a wonderful promise. Later in Ezekiel 11, 19 and 20, "And I will put a new spirit within you, that you may walk in my statutes, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God." Now there's a wonderful reestablishment of God's relationship with mankind. "I will open your graves and bring you up out of your graves," getting rid of that condemnation of death. Wonderful promises in the future. We continue with these. In 1 Corinthians 15, 22 and 23, "For as in Adam all die," now that's for now, that's happening now, "and the Adamic curse, the Adamic covenant," mankind's all still under the Adamic covenant, which holds out only the condemnation of death. "Even so in Christ shall all be made alive," that's in the future, "but every man in his own order, Christ the first fruits, and afterward there Christ at his presence." So if you're going to a funeral and they're putting their loved ones in heaven, say, "Oh, then the Lord has returned." They go, "What? Here it is. That's the only way to get there." Revelation 21:3, "And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his God, and God himself shall be with them and be their God." So here's the fulfillment of the promises then that God had made way back in Exodus chapter 6. "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new." Sorry, I'm not keeping up with myself. So we read these scriptures, and this is telling us about this great restoration, this great restitution of the things that Adam had, but we don't know about the when. When is this going to happen? Sounds really good. Tell me when. Where do I go? Do I have to fill out a coupon and send it in? How do we make this happen? So the timing is extremely important, and timing, knowing where do we place this chart on the stream of time? Where can we place these events? We know the general structure, and we know the events relative to each other, but we can't place them on our calendar yet. When exactly is this going to take place? So the timing, very important. "Repent ye therefore," in Acts 3:19, "and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out." Now notice they're not covered, they're blotted out. "When the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord," and this presence is prosopon. This, as I'm sure we all know, it's prosopon. Prosopon means out from the face of, and it's really is the idea of one who is showing you favor, they're showing their face. And if someone is showing you disfavor, what do? They won't even look at you. In fact, if you've ever been at work and you're working on something and you really goofed it up, and your boss finds out, and you walk in the room and he says, Bill, I don't mean to pick you on here, but Bill, you know, I think it'd be best if you just go away this afternoon, and I can't even look at you right now. That's how God was. He hid his face. In fact, if you read Psalm 80, this is Israel realizing their sin, realizing how angry God is with them, and they're pleading with God, "Show your face to us. Let your face shine upon us." Because face is favor. When somebody looks at you, when you've done something good and they look at you and they smile, and their face is beaming. So the face is a picture of favor. "And how will this be done? Well, he will send Jesus Christ, who before was preached unto you." So we have Jesus Christ. He's being sent. So he must have been away, and now he's being sent. This is his return. In Acts 3:21, "whom the heaven must receive or retain until the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began." All of them. So here is this link, this inextricable link. He shall send Jesus Christ, whom the heavens must retain or receive until the times of restitution. So the Lord's return and the times of restitution are there linked together. They're epoxied together. They're cemented together, welded. They're fused together in God's plan. This is for our understanding, so we can start, so we know what to look for. Notice this word refreshing. I like this word refreshing. It's from Strong's 403. Recovery of breath. He breathed into Adam the breath of life, and he became a living soul. So this is this recovering of breath, this refreshing. And this also, the Strong's 5550, for times. You might say until the times of restitution. Well, you know, it may sound a little wishy-washy, indefinite. It's plural, you know. But it actually means a fixed or special occasion. So this is fixed. So we want to know what this is. And what is it return? What is it talking about? It's talking about the Lord's return. This is supposed to be a really pretty gold color, which it isn't. It's sort of like the mustard you had at lunch. But it's supposed to be a nice gold color. The Lord's return, and it's also talking about the single most prominent feature of all Scripture, which is the day of the Lord. I mean, just look up the day of the Lord or in that day. Just look that up, and you'll see you'll get hit after hit after hit. I mean, just it's plastered everywhere in the Scriptures. So if someone is not looking forward to the Lord's return, they've just sort of cut out half of the Bible, because that's what it's really about. That's what it's really about. Okay. So we take a look at this day of the Lord, the 2 Peter 3:8, one day with the Lord is as 1,000 years. So we want to learn more about this 1,000-year period, what is going to be coming, happening. And this is a wonderful subject. We're just going to touch on another thing here. Revelation 20, verse 4, and they came to life. This is from the New American Standard, and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. So it tells you this is a period of coming to life, just as in the 1 Corinthians 15, they who are Christ's at his presence, they would have life. So this is the period of coming to life, and they're reigning with Christ for 1,000 years. It's Christ's reign. It's not the church's reign. It's Christ's reign. Well, in the second volume, page 39, Brother Russell talks about a venerable tradition. And it comes from an understanding of the law in Exodus 20 that we have 6 days of labor followed by a Sabbath rest. 6 days of labor. Now, this word labor, this is very difficult for many of us to even comprehend, because we don't do any. We just don't do any. I mean, I know when I travel across the country for a convention, you know, I walk out of my house, I walk into a car, I sit down, drive maybe 30, 40 miles to an airport. And while you're driving in the car, you adjust the seat, you adjust the temperature, you might listen to a symphony, you know, everything is all padded and real nice. Shock absorbers, you don't even feel the bumps in the road. And one of the chief dangers of being in your car and driving is falling asleep. We're not doing any labor. And then when you get to the airport, you're in this nice little carpeted room. Then you walk down this little carpeted hallway into a sort of a long, narrow room with seats. You sit there a few hours. When you get out, you've gone hundreds and hundreds, maybe over 1,000 miles. You've been sleeping along the way. There is no labor. So when we talk about this, the fact that the day of the Lord is the Sabbath, the release of the sweat of face, the release of labor, we're in it, brother, and I think we all know we're in it. How many calluses can you show me on your hands? Probably none. You know, we just don't do much labor at all. But we know the day of the Lord is 1,000 years. We have this, so this would be this Sabbath year of rest. So the 6 days of labor would be 6,000 years. So we'd have 6,000 years here, and then finishing up with the 1,000-year Sabbath here. So now what we want to find out is this would be when the fall takes place, because when Adam sinned, that's when he was told in the sweat of thy face. So here's where this labor begins. So this 6,000 year begins. But one of our problems is to find out, when did this take place? Now, if we could just look up a scripture and say, well, it was, you know, October 21st of whatever year, then we'd have it. God doesn't do it that way for us. So you have to put a few concepts together. But what we really want to know is When does this golden thousand year verse begin? Okay. So this day of the Lord is to be after the 6,000 years of sweat of face, after this curse. And we know this should be at least 6,000 years after Adam's creation. He was created perfect. He was doing good. No sin. It's in harmony with God, naming the animals. Got his wife for some period of time. But sometime after that is when the sin took place. So we would know that this 1,000-year period we're looking for has to be at least 6,000 years after Adam's creation. And that's something we can actually start tracing, this chronology starting from Adam's creation. So we're the time in the garden before sin is when this chronology began. So if we have the chronology starting from Adam, we understand that Adam was created in the sixth creative day. And this is in Genesis 1, 27 and 31. God created man in his own image the sixth day. Now, it's the very end of the sixth day, which we'll see, but it was still in the sixth day. Because what did God do on the seventh day? He rested. And not a news flash for you, but for the rest of the world it would be, guess what? God's still resting. He's not going to be giving life anymore. That's why you need a life giver. In these times of restitution, you need the Christ head and body to be the life giver because God's not doing it. That's why the spirit begotten ones are called the new creation. They're not like the old creation because he's resting from that. Okay, resting from that. That's why you need the Christ head and body. All right. Now, when we look at our chart over here, the vast majority of our chart is the seventh day, not the sixth. We have only a tiny little bit way over to the left with the with Adam. There's just a tiny, tiny bit on that sixth day, but all the rest is on the seventh day, which we want to see. Okay. So, beginning with Adam in Bible chronology, from Adam to the flood, Abrahamic covenant, etc. We're familiar with this, 1656, 427, etc. These are all well-established periods of time. Not only given in the Old Testament, but some of the problems are cleared up in the New Testament for us. So if we have some problem with the Old, we can just read the New Testament and get those things taken care of. But we have these periods of time. Notice from Adam. Yep, here we go. I have three things going here. So from Adam to the flood, down to the end of the desolation of the land in the first year of Cyrus, we add these all up. We come down to our chart. This is part of the chart that I think we're all familiar with. And we'll see these periods of time, which we've just read, 1656, 427, etc., the 70 years. We know how long they were. We know how long they were relative to each other and relative to man being created in the sixth creative day, but we can't stick this on our calendar anywhere. Where do we put it? See, that's the problem. So how do we match it to our calendar? Well, it turns out because we know the first year of Cyrus is well documented to be in 536 BC. And by the way, your handout is missing a thing or two. So you have to fill those out so you'll be ready for the quiz at the end. Okay. All right. But we know it's because this is in the year 536 BC, we have 536 years up to the BC-AD line. Okay. Once we have this is what allows us to take a push pin and push that date right there onto 536 BC. Now we know where things are. Relative to our modern calendar, we know exactly where things are. So 536 is extremely important. So if we start, if we start from the BC-AD line, and we can go backward or forward, we know it's 4,128 years to the creation of Adam. And if we go 6,000 years from that creation of Adam, out 6,000 years, we can then conclude that it's 1,800, that would be 1,872 years, 1,872 and 4,128 equals the 6,000. But that would tell us that this 1,000-year day of the Lord must begin sometime after 1,872. Sometime after 1872. Simple arithmetic. Okay. So how are we going to get to this? Well, to get the answer we're looking for, when does the day of the Lord begin, we have to know one of the endpoints of that 6,000-year period. One of the endpoints. So either we start if we know the fall, we have the 6,000 years, we can come to the end. Right. Actually, that should... Yes, the fall. That's what... I'm sorry. That's exactly what we want. Not the creation, but the fall. 6,000 years, and that would tell us, at the end of that, would tell us the times of restitution. So if we have either endpoint, we already know the duration, then we've got it. So it's a matter of, we can look for either one of these two endpoints. When does restitution begin, or when did the fall actually take place? Well, we take a look in the types of the law. Why were these types of the law given? Well, in the Murdoch translation of Hebrews 10:1, for in the law there was a shadow of good things to come, a shadow. We're also told that we have ensamples, and samples are types, lessons that would be deeper for us. So the law was typical to give us these lessons. And one of the key things we want to ask, if we're looking for when will restitution begin, when will the Lord return, is there a type that talks about restitution? That's really one of the key questions. What is the type we'd look for to talk about restitution? Well, the answer, of course, is yes, and it's a thrilling answer. It's the Jubilee, the lesson of restoration, the lesson of restitution. In Leviticus 25, 2 through 6, when you come into the land, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. And they're told that for 6 years you'll sow, you'll prune, you'll gather fruit. In other words, you will do all the labor that is necessary to feed yourself. You're farmers, you have to do this work to feed yourself. But when you come to the seventh year, this is a seventh year of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. In other words, you're not going to do any harvesting. You'll do no harvesting, no planting, no reaping. Now, to a farmer who's dependent upon this to feed his family, this is a pretty serious thing to say to him. Hey, guess what? In the seventh year, you can't even plant a crop. Something grows, you can't harvest it. But trust me on this. I'm going to make sure all the previous years are going to be bountiful enough that it will feed your family to go on to the next planting time and the next harvest. Now, to any farmer, that's a big leap of faith. That's a big leap of faith. God is saying, you are my people. I will take care of you. You obey my laws. You keep my Sabbaths. I will make sure this takes place. I will make sure. Continue with this lesson of restoration. He says, number seven Sabbaths of years unto thee, seven times 7 years, 40 and 9 years. And then cause the trumpet of Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the seventh month in the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement. We've been talking a lot about the Day of Atonement. Israel had been in their sins. In the typical people, they were in their sins on the Day of Atonement. They had no relationship with God. Once the priests were finished with the Day of Atonement sacrifices, they had reestablished the people's relationship with God. So after this Day of Atonement, canceling these past sins, this is what this is picturing in this Jubilee year. Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout all the land. It shall be a Jubilee unto you. And then here's the key. And ye shall return every man unto his possession. Here's the key. To me, that says it. Return every man. In other words, here's the restoration. Here's the restitution. They're going to come back to their original possessions. So for this typical Jubilee, returning unto every man unto his possessions, that sounds... Now we know that this would be their original possessions of the land. When they came to the land was divided amongst the tribes, amongst the families. Every family was given a portion, and the firstborn, the possession would go down through the firstborn's portion. But through the course of time, they may go into debt. They may not be able to pay. So they say, okay, well, you can take some of my land. Take half of my land. Use that. So they would get that, not in perpetuity, but they get that until the year of Jubilee. When the year of Jubilee happens, the land comes back to them. So everything would be returned. This is something that they were supposed to practice. It sounds very similar to me, like, behold, I make all things new. In fact, I remember many years ago, it's probably about 15 years ago, when my dad was alive, they had been through a Bible study in their Presbyterian church, you know, just mechanically going through and reading the Bible. It was a very good exercise. And I was saying to him some things about the Jubilees one time in one of our several conversations. Or I was talking to him about restitution. I was talking to him about the kingdom. About the kingdom. And Dad said, you know, that sounds a lot like the Jubilee. And I said, Dad, hold that thought. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make right now. So, yeah, that was thrilling. These times of restitutions. Times of restitution there we go. So return every man unto his possession, or behold, I make all things new. In other words, you get it back, brand new. The times of restitution, at the Lord's return. Now, you might say, well, these Jubilees, these took place a long, long, long time ago. This is thousands of years ago. That's old. That's past. We don't have to worry about that anymore. But did it pass away? Did it pass away and nothing happened? Well, that's one of the things we want to ask ourselves. How about an antitypical Jubilee? Because we know that in Matthew 5:18, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. So if we say this has passed away, then we better be looking for a fulfillment, because this is guaranteed by God. This is guaranteed. The type cannot pass away or end without fulfillment. So we want to look for the fulfillment. Where would we look at it? We'd look at it somewhere around where the type ends. Okay, somewhere where the type ends. So if we look at the type more carefully, we'll see that he says, when you come into the land, count 6 years. And then after that 6 year, there'll be a Sabbath year. So we'll count 7 times 7 Sabbath years will bring us up to 49 years. And then the Jubilee year will be the 50th year. So you do this and then repeat. Do this and repeat and repeat and repeat. So just to look at this pictorially, we have 7 years in which they would sow, plant, reap, etc. The first 6 years, and then the seventh year would be a Sabbath year in which they rest, the land rests. And then you continue this for seven periods of 49 years. And then at the end you have this nice shiny golden, should be, nice shiny gold Jubilee year, this 50th year. And then once they finish this cycle, they begin again at this first year, go up to the 7, etc. So this is what they were to do. Now, one of the things we'd like to do as an aside is talk about a year, what a year is. The civil year. The civil year begins about the autumnal equinox. And actually, if you look in Great Pyramid Passages, there's a wonderful little chapter. It's about 4 pages long. It's called The Year. And it mentions, the Edgars mentioned that in antiquity, Israel was like all the other nations. I mean, they hadn't been God. Exodus 12 had not happened. And the way they counted years was the same way every other nation counted years. It began about October, which is around the autumnal equinox, but not quite. And actually, it was when the Pleiades would pass directly overhead at midnight. That's when they would count the beginning of their year. Okay, and that happens about October 1st. So the civil year, about the autumnal equinox, really connected with the Pleiades, would happen about October 1st, and we go until October 1st. So Israel was like all other nations. Their civil year, everything having to do with the land. And when you're looking at civil things, these are legal things having to do with transaction, land, and etc. And they're dealing with other nations. They would want to deal with them in terms that those other nations comprehend and agree with. In fact, we look at Rosh Hashanah, the new year. This is really a civil new year. For the Jewish new year, it begins in Tishri. Which is about October. Now, the religious year, on the other hand, in Exodus 12:2, this, where God says, this will be the beginning of months. Keep in mind, this is the month when the Passover took place. This is the Passover lamb. He began their year in the month of their release because of the Passover lamb, as though he was saying to all Israel, I want you to see the lamb and never forget. In fact, I'm going to center your whole year to begin it with this. But for other things, civil purposes, you're going to be like the other nations. Okay. So when we take a look at the year, so this was this set Israel apart from the other nations, their religious year. When we take a look at the year, our year, the Gregorian year, which we use, is starts January 1st, goes to January 31st, or begins the next one, goes the next January 1st. But when we take a look at the religious year of the Jews, it is about April 1st, going to April 1st. Again, began with the new moon. The months began with the new moon. But the civil year actually begins back here, October 1st. So if this were, if we're talking about the year, 2009? If we're talking about 2009, as far as the Jews were concerned, that actually began in October of 2008. Okay? So that's how we want to see that. That's very, very, we'll see that that is, becomes very important. Now let's take a little example. The 2520 years, the times of the Gentiles. We're all familiar with that. We have it 2520 years, the times of the Gentiles. And we're going to go from around 606 to around 1914. And this little break here just means a break in time. So we have the BC-AD line, the year 1 BC, the year 1 AD. As we're going forward in time, there's the year 1913, the year 1914. As we're going back in time, past the year 1, here's the year 606, the year 607. Okay. Now, the little blue lines represent October, because October 1st is the beginning of the civil year. Now, what we'd like to see is how do we come up with this 2520 years? We'll find that it actually goes from the October to October. Now, let's count this up, because it's just arithmetic. First, we have 606 full years. We have, now this is going from our Gregorian calendar, where this is the January, the tall lines are January. January 606 would be the beginning of this year as far as our calendar is concerned. We go all of the year 606, 605, 604, all the way up to year 1, and then we'd start in January of 1 BC, go all the way until 1 BC is over. That gives us 606 full years. Okay, 606 full years. Then we continue from the year 1 AD, 2 AD, etc., up through all of the beginning of 1913, up to the end of 1913. And that will give us 1,913 full years. So if we add this all up, we'll see we have a little quarter of a year, because the Jewish year, or the civil year, 606, actually began in October of 607. And this, and we have October 1914 adds another three quarters of a year. So now if we add all the pieces together, we have 606 plus 1913 plus a quarter coming from here plus three quarters here gives us the 2520. So the 606 BC, that's a really short way to say it. That's the Jewish year. But if we say that as far as the Gregorian calendar, it's really from October 607 all the way to October 1914. Now, brother, when I read this, it was several years ago, but when I read this and I saw how all these little tiny pieces fit together, I really got a wonderful feel. I mean, I really felt settled. Because I had played with these additions before. I said, you know, it's not working out the way I expected. Here it works out perfectly. And if you're wondering about the 607, if you remember the Grabner's phone number, their phone number is 217-607-1874. So those are some really good numbers. Not 1914, but 1874. So to understand what a year is. So what we want to do is if the antitype begins where the type ends, what we want to do is look for the end of the type. That's really what we want to do. So let's take a closer look at the type and see how did the type really take place. Well, when you come into the land, And they came into the land in the spring, but it was in the year beginning this. Now, if it was the land, keep in mind land, this is a civil feature. This has to do with the land that they have. And this land was possessed by others. They went in and took it. This was in the year beginning on October 1576 B.C. So here's the 1576 B.C. And when they were coming to the land, they were supposed to do these 49-year counting cycle, then the Jubilee. So they do it again, and they keep repeating, and keep going. And keep on going. And they would keep doing it just ad infinitum. God didn't say do it a certain amount of time and then stop. But something got in the way. Now, in all these early years, we'll find that there were various captivities and whatnot, but they're always able to, God would always bring them back in the land so they enjoy their Sabbaths. But then, God had given them this law. He says, ye shall keep my Sabbaths. If you will not hearken unto me, I will punish you seven times, which is what we just talked about, the 2,520 years. In other words, God is saying, if you trust me that I will feed you, that I will keep you alive and bless you, then you will do this. Now, if you don't do this, you're telling me you don't trust me. And there are folks who said, well, you know, I'm not so sure about this. I'm going to plant a crop anyway. You know, that's something I can get into. I can believe in that. I plant the seeds, I harvest, I know I got the food, I'm fine. God says, okay, if that's the way you want it, you don't want my protection, see how you like things under the Babylonians. I'll just take my protection away. Try Babylon. So what happens is we have this 70 years of desolation of land where they were taken captive. And this really began in October of 607 B.C., that we just talked about. Well, because of that, that's a 70-year period. There's no way for them to get back to the land after 49 years to observe. You can't fit you can't fit 70 inside a 49 or 50-year period. So what had to happen is, when this 70-year desolation was taking place, those Jubilee cycles had to end. So it's a matter of saying, okay, when was the last one? It turns out October 626 B.C. is when the type ends. That was the end of the last typical Jubilee year. So we had actually 19 typical Jubilee cycles, 950 years. Then we had another 19 years that would between the last typical Jubilee and the beginning of their desolation, their captivity or desolation of the land. And this is when the 2,520 years would begin. Okay. So if we look at ending and beginning, the type ends. Now, keep in mind what the type is, as we have a 50th, the Jubilee is a 50th year. And when this type ends, this is when the antitype would begin. And then because in the type we square the 7 times 7, and the antitype is larger than the type, we will square the 50 times 50. So this would be a duration of 2,520 years. And we'll find that in the antitype, what we're really looking for is the 50th year. Not beginning back here, but beginning when the type ended. So this would begin to count in October 626 B.C. So we have our 2,520-year counting cycle. I'm sorry, 2,500-year counting cycle beginning in the October 626 B.C. So here's where the antitype begins, but keep in mind it begins with a counting cycle. So if we step back a little bit, we'll see the... We see the 2,520-year counting cycle ends in October 1875. But what we're doing is when we see this, this would end with the 50th year. The 50th year, this little yellow year here. Well, this is what we're looking for, this great antitypical Jubilee beginning at the 50th year. Well, when does October 1875 the cycle ends? Well, when did that year begin? Well, it began in October 1874. So what we do is we replace that last 2,500th year with the 1,000-year day of the Lord. So here's what we have. So we have a little bit of overlap. That last year, we have that a little bit of overlap there. Okay, so when we take a look at this according to the law, knowing what is the type and what is the antitype. In the type, we have the counting cycle along with the Jubilee years for 19 of these cycles, really ending in 626. Here is the type. And the antitype is the counting cycle, 2,500 years, where the last year is the 1,000-year day of the Lord. So we have 950 years in the type, and in the antitype we have 3,499 years. Notice not 3,500, because we have a 2,500-year counting cycle. That last year is now replaced by the 1,000 years. So we have 3,499 years. It's also interesting to me that God wants us to be able to count over these great periods of time. These great periods of time mean that if somebody says, well, here, there's something you have to do at a certain time, and they leave you in this totally dark room, and you've got to do something at that period of time, there's one other thing they have to do for you. They have to give you a watch. They have to give you a clock, right? So what God did, he says, I want you to be able to count these years. So what he did is he turned the entire planet into a clock. It's tilted 23.5 degrees on its axis, so as it goes around, we have seasons. Summer, winter, fall, spring. Not necessarily in that order. But unless you live in Illinois, I guess. But he's made the earth a clock so you can actually count years. He's just thought of everything for us. Okay. Well, we have this prophetic corroboration in the scriptures listed here. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths. And if you will not hearken, I will punish you seven times. I will scatter you amongst the heathen, and your land shall be desolate. Then the land shall enjoy her Sabbaths to fulfill 70 years. I mean, I think this is just wonderful. Even though they never did it, God tells us here's the period of time so we can actually count properly, which will be important in the next corroboration. And then I will remember my covenant with Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham, and I will remember the land. So this is just wonderful. Well, remember this covenant. Okay, so the prophetic corroboration, we have 19. The prophet... Really? Okay. Okay, well, we have this prophetic corroboration. And I think we're familiar with it. We're going to speed up a little bit because we want to get to a few more points. Where we have the 19 Jubilees, where they have the Jubilee years, then this, the period of the desolation of the land, where in October 626, there were still 51 Jubilee cycles left, which God really was observing, but they had to observe without the Jubilee year. This brings us, keep in mind these are typical counting cycles, but since God has already taken those 7 years, we don't need to count them again. This 2499 brings us up to October 1874. Then God will remember his covenant and the land. And with this brings us to the exact same period of time, October 1874, the 1,000 years times of restitution. So if we look at this, we have the type is really this period of 3,449 years, and the antitype is simply the times of restitution themselves of 1,000 years. So if we look at these two, both the law, the way God had intended, and the prophecy, the way it works out, this is just a miraculous arithmetic calculation that God has designed so that you can count it with two different ways. You come up with the same answer. And keep in mind, the Jubilee, understand the Jubilees is the only way you can prove that the Lord has returned. This is the only way. You can't use the 1,335 days. That just says, oh, the blessedness. You have no idea what that blessing is. This is the type of restitution. This is what will tell you when the times of restitution actually, when they actually start. So from Adam to October 1872 was 6,000 years. But the 6,000 years sweat of face ends in October 1874. This will tell us that there's actually 2 years in the garden. And Brother Russell, if you look up Screw Loose in the third volume, he says, it sounds like there may be a screw loose. Well, no, Adam was 2 years in the garden. Very interesting. So the Bible chronology, we have this 2 years in the garden, but the day of Adam's sin is when the seventh creative day actually begins. So Genesis chapter 3 really is a documentation of one day, the first day of this seventh 7,000-year epochal day. The Jubilee lessons tell us the times of restitution, the Lord's return, the end of the 6,000-year sweat of faith, Adam's fall, Adam's creation, the 2 years in the garden without sin, the beginning of the seventh creative day, the beginning of the Lord's reign. What is this blessing of the 1,335 days of Daniel? Well, it's the blessing of restitution and the Lord's return. Well, has restitution begun? Good question. Some might say, well, no, it hasn't begun. I don't see anybody coming up out of the graves, and the blood hasn't been applied. The church is still here. How could it begin? Well, to find the answer, what we have to do is trace the dominion of earth, which we want to do very, very briefly. We know that in Genesis 1, that Adam, God had said, let them, Adam and Eve, have dominion over the earth. but they lost that due to disobedience. They failed to obey. In Genesis 22:18, in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. So this seed will be something that will have life, because a dead blesser cannot bless anyone, someone who would have life. Someone who will also have the scepter, Genesis 49:10. In Leviticus 18:5, he says, you shall keep my statutes, which if a man do, he shall live in them. This tells us that whoever would be the seed of Abraham would be the one who would be obedient and do God's laws in every particular, and that's how they would gain life. So, really, the seed of we also know it would be of the son of David, of the fruit of his body will is set upon the throne. So whoever does the law perfectly would have to be the seed of Abraham. Now, Jesus said, I've kept my Father's commandments. In Revelation 5, worthy is the Lamb who is slain. So if we look at where we're standing, actually, this is Emmanuel's ground. Our Lord purchased the earth. He is the seed of Abraham, not because of his death, but because he was tested to keep the law until his death. In other words, at his death, that test was now finished. He's the seed of Abraham. He has the scepter. At his resurrection, he has his scepter. When he returns, he's returning to planet Earth. This is Emmanuel's ground. This is his. So he can begin restoring it, even though he cannot personally deal with man himself. So what is happening is this prison planet is being renewed in several ways, where man is still going down, 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 but he is enabled to produce a society that's going up and up and up. In fact, man is producing a society where fallen man does not belong. Look at the internet. What's it being used for? Perfect man would use it correctly. Fallen man doesn't have a clue on how to use it. So, it's because he left the law inviolate, the scepter, dominion, etc. Brother Russell talks about this in Harvest Gleanings, Volume 3, page 864. So the restitution of all things, restitution of man, and we're familiar with these beautiful scriptures, which reminds me of Pennsylvania Dutch brand egg noodles. And you should all be saying, what in the world is he talking about? When I was a kid, I lived in York, Pennsylvania, and they advertised these noodles on the radio all the time, and they'd say, Pennsylvania Dutch brand egg noodles, get to know what good is. And I heard that all the time. And brethren, when I was 32, that's when I first heard the truth. And I heard about the kingdom, and that's when man will get to know what good is. So I've been looking for these noodles for about 6 years. I finally found a bag, and I bought a bag the last time I was in Pennsylvania. So get to know what good is. So we have this grand jubilee, this great picture of the epochal days, the seven epochal days, all of 1,000 years coming down to this final day of the Lord. But when all is finished, we'll have the 50th 1,000-year day, which there will be a circumcision of heart for all mankind, really on the eighth day. That's when Jews were circumcised. So this would be the beginning of the ages to come. Okay. Thank you, brother. May the Lord add his blessing.
Thank you, Brother Harry, for that very thorough examination of Earth's great jubilee. I'm sure you're all saddened that Brother Harry ran out of time and we won't be able to do the quiz. However, he's assured me you can take your handout home and use it for an open book quiz with your volume 2 to refresh yourself. So he's given us much to think about. Thank you, Brother Harry.